Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Is that a Toros hat?
It is.
Wow.
Old school Tucson Toros hat. Yes.
Padres, Dodgers just completed. Obviously, we're going to get into that. Padres, Rockies about to start. So they go from the best team in baseball to one of the worst teams in baseball. We can talk about kind of that transition. Where would you like to start, Ryan?
Kevin, the Padres won a series against the Dodgers. When we talked Friday, we talked about the path to victory for them is so narrow, right? It's like shooting down the Death Star. Right, you've got to hit it in just the right spot. Not allowing them to score is a really good strategy. And to me, the story of the weekend is A, the Padres take a series. B, the Padres pitch their tails off. Let's talk starting pitching and what did you see?
Historic, by the way. Yeah. First time ever? No, first time, well, I mean, since 1893. So since most of us were alive, that a pitching staff that four starters in a row went five innings or more, four starts in a row while allowing two hits or fewer. That's
wild.
Wow. And what we're talking about is that started with Cease in Chicago on Wednesday. Michael King, Matt Waldron, who everybody bags on, but come on now, and Yu Darvish. So, wow. But here's the thing. That's historic. Okay, they haven't done that. They have had that. They have had fantastic turns through the rotation. Mm-hmm. So it needs to keep up because they've also had some really bad turns through the rotation. But what this shows you and what the good turns show you is like that is their path to victory. There is a thought that like that was supposed to be the strength of their team. We can talk about the big three and the and how important that is. And I kind of harp on it all the time that Manny Machado needs to be better. Xander Bogaerts needs to be better. Heck, you could even argue Fernando Tatis Jr. needs to be better, though he's been the best of the three. But to me, it's when the starting pitching is allowing two runs in the first, right? And they're or four runs over the first three innings, and you're constantly putting the offense in a hole, which has happened too often this year. That's a big deal. To me, that's been the biggest impediment to them being better than 22 and 21 at this point. So that was just, you are right. That was the thing that stood out.
Right. The Padres scored six runs in three games and still won a series, thanks to good pitching. Yeah, by contrast, last weekend they took two or three from the Diamondbacks. They scored 24 runs in three games. So, yeah. I mean, again, you can do some things when you're starting pitching is shoving. Did any of those performances, and I know, Kevin, it's like asking you to name a favorite child, but is of the three, I mean, I would say Cease, or let's say between Cease and Darvish, what was your favorite performance of those two?
Well, Cease's was incredibly dominant. The Cubs have been a pretty good offense. But Darvish, okay, first off, Cease has been that guy, right? Now, Darvish has been that guy, but not so much this year. Now he's put together three really good outings in a row, and that was the best, and it was up against the best team. So to me, Darvish, that was, I mean, you want to talk about, and we've said this a few times, that's, you know, this season, that's just what the Padres needed. Well, Darvish doing that, that's just what they needed.
Yeah, since returning from the injured list, he's been filthy. I thought yesterday it was interesting to see not only the stuff, but some emotion there from him. He's not a guy who typically pounds his chest and points to the heavens after he strikes somebody out. But he was emotional. It felt like a playoff game. Watching on TV, to me at least, it was a goosebumps kind of day from a team that did not deliver too many goosebumps moments last year.
They are so much more enjoyable to watch. I've had a lot of fans and acquaintances say more fun to watch, right? Mm-hmm. And I was at I was not at yesterday's game. One of the days that I am sure to take off if we're at the Padres or at home is Mother's Day. But I was watching the game and I was watching it at a Mother's Day gathering with some Padres fans and they were really into it, right? And I don't know that over the course of a season or in May that you know, when the team's not good and exciting, that fans are like that kind of geeked up and into it and knowledgeable about things because they're a fun team to watch and a fun team to follow. And so, yeah, that was big. Now, here's my thing. 2021, one of the great regular season series that I have ever covered. in terms of intensity and just gutty performances, big performances by big players. Padres take 3 of 4 against the Dodgers at Dodger Stadium in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
In June, they sweep the Dodgers. At this point, they've won 6 out of 7 after losing the first two of the season. Two of the first three against them. Mm-hmm. But at that point, they're winning the season series, and it's not even like a question. They lost their next 9 games that season against the Dodgers and collapsed. It's May. They need to keep it going. Here's the thing that's kind of sticking out to me. The Cubs series, veteran baseball people felt like at least the first two games had a playoff vibe in the ballpark and among the pitching and just kind of how the games went. Dodger series, playoff vibe. Whew, that's a lot. You needed the Rockies for a break, but you can't take a break. But you that it's been pretty intense the last week.
Right. I would argue that the maybe most memorable moment of their season so far may have come Friday. You got Luis Arraez with a walk-off single doing what he does. What we're seeing every day now is just being able to put bat to ball, put the ball in play, single to center, sold out Petco Park, goes crazy. To me, that was one of the big moments from this team. And I know momentum doesn't really count in baseball, but to me, it felt like we could look back at this series being significant in part because of what happened Friday.
And the fact that we can say that, whereas, you kind of gave up on that. Maybe not by this point in the season, but last year it was like there were so many moments where it was like, well, maybe this is the one. Yeah. And this year, they're so far, they've been sort of building on those, right?
Mm-hmm.
They have. They do something good and you go, well, maybe that's something. And then it's kind of looking like, yeah, maybe that is something. So I do agree.
Yeah, yeah. And again, it seemed like last year there were a lot of extra innings games. There were a lot of one-run games. As we know, the Padres were almost historically bad in both. To see them walk off and to have their new addition be the guy delivering the hit, I thought was special.
It does go back to, and look, again, they had a lot of special moments in 2021, okay? Mm-hmm. But they were a fun team to watch for two-thirds of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
2020, no one was there, but you saw it on TV, and I will tell you in person, it was as remarkable as an empty ballpark can be, some of those moments. 2022, electric moments. They did go to the playoffs 2 of those 3 years. They are having more of those moments so far this year.
Yeah, I agree. And it seems like they're having fun. And maybe some of it is just the result. Maybe some of it is the makeup of the clubhouse. This, to me, seems like a team that people are rallying behind, in part because it looks like they're enjoying themselves.
Some of the stuff that I'm kind of, saving, and some I've written about, but like in conversations with players, both after wins for sure, but even after losses, they are enjoying themselves. They are having fun. And they are appreciating the way that they're practicing and playing. There's a difference. Putting down any – I'm talking specifically about the way Mike Schilt and this coaching staff is the way that they are doing things this year, preparing these players, the kind of baseball they're playing. There's a couple things I wanted to point out. It doesn't matter if it's a 7-run lead. Jose Azokar is going to go in for Jurickson Profar. Generally, a defensive replacement – is for a 1-2, maybe a 3-run lead. All right.
Mm-hmm.
It's happened in 80% of games this year.
Mm-hmm.
There was a game against the Dodgers, maybe when it was, I don't know, it was a close, maybe it was Friday, I guess, that he didn't go in Azokar. And I think it was because you still did want to have Profar's bat in a close game like that.
Mm-hmm.
And Profar's not bad at defense. The other thing is, yesterday was the, and I should have looked this up, but it was 4th or 5th time. Either way, remarkable, and more than any other closer in baseball, that Robert Suarez was protecting a 4-run lead, as in pitching in a non-save situation. And like, Mike Schilt is about winning today, man. And now watch his pitcher usage. Watch how he tried to ride Waldron on Sunday in Arizona with an eye on the Chicago series. I wrote about that in my Padres Daily the next day, and it turned out kind of worked, huh? Had he chased that victory on Sunday in Arizona, they would have been spent for Chicago. So it's not that he every manager's got to manage with an eye to the future, but Mike Schilt more than Bob Melvin and better than Jace Tingler. Jace Tingler did a little bit, but better than Jace Tingler in terms of the guys that I've covered here recently, aggressively goes after each day's victory.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. One player who is aggressive. I'm trying for a segue here, Kevin.
I love that. I could tell when you were two words into it, man, when you were like, segue, go for it.
No, but somebody who I think has been a big surprise in a season full of them so far is Jackson Merrill. Again, we could look up some of these stats, some of these factoids, and he's an elite company. Somebody who I think has gone through his first really big slump of his career as a 21-year-old guy, and is back hitting, back producing, and doing some pretty special stuff. I think we saw that this weekend.
Yesterday, first Padres player in history, or youngest, I'm sorry. That would be silly. They would be a really bad team if it was the first, but the youngest player in Padres history to have 3 hits and 2 stolen bases in a game. Now, only so many people are up this, you know, and playing at 21 years and whatever it is, 20 days. So that's remarkable. 2 things. There was a walk I wrote about in Chicago in the final day where he went down 0-2, fouled off a ball, drove it down the line. It was foul by like inches, came back and worked a walk. The other day, first game against the Dodgers, he had like a 7-8 pitch at bat, and it was the way that the at bat worked. It was again like 0-2, some close fouls, some close takes, and then he lined out to center field. These are the at-bats that really impressed me about Jackson Merrill, in addition to, of course, to some of the hits that he's gotten and the situations that he's come through. But the guy just knows how to play baseball, man.
Yeah, yeah. He has 11 multi-hit games so far this season. I think it says something about him as a baseball player that he has sort of dug himself out of what was a really bad slump. And as you know, Kevin, when dealing with failure is so much a part of being a big leaguer, for him to really turn it on lately as he has, it's great. Turning to Twitter here for a minute, or X or whatever we're calling it, baseball savant data says that Jackson Merrill's bat speed is 3rd best on the team behind Manny Machado and Fernando Tatis Jr., which is interesting. Now, it's a young man. Bat speed is a young man's skill, right? It only goes down the older you get, as we're learning with a couple of struggling Padres. But the bat tracking data from him.
I can't wait to dive into that and learn more about it, because Luis Arraez evidently does not have.
Correct.
But so, okay. But Luis Arraez gets to the ball awful quickly. So, I don't know this. What is bat speed measuring? Obviously, bat speed's very important. It's something teams have been looking at for forever. But, it's really interesting. Luis Arraez, something happens where his hands are in position. Obviously, his hand-eye coordination makes up for a lot. So I'm really interested in that. I really can't wait to figure out, because when I say that, I'm trying to really get myself geeked up about it, because like most things in life, and certainly in baseball metrics, I know this is not the direction you expected to go, but here I am, Ryan. It probably was that you got me riled up the second you mentioned Twitter. what we've introduced here is another thing for people to focus on as opposed to production.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
like, do I really need to know I've said bat speed, very important. Do I really need to know Xander Bogaerts' bat speed when he's hitting 194? But then it's like, oh, this guy's doing this. Oh, but his bat speed is
right.
Anyway, I'll be very, very interested to hear about this more. And I think that even some of the stat geeks are learning more about bat speed.
Absolutely. Clark Fahrenthold, by the way, is the hat tip to him on that stat. That according to him, using the Baseball Savant data, Jackson Merrill has something called a 90.2% competitive swing percentage. So for our next episode, Kevin, I'll do some homework. I'll figure out what the hell that means. And then maybe we can talk about that. What do you think?
That's good. And I do want to apologize for my little rant. I love the metrics. I love the metrics used responsibly. Like, oh, wow. Well, that's what my eyes were seeing this, right? Mm-hmm. And now, oh, wow, the metric explained that to me, right? Expected mm-hmm. batting average, you know, that sort of thing. It's like, oh, wow. But anyway.
I think, too, that often with baseball metrics, oftentimes they serve to confirm what we sort of know to be true, right? Does it surprise you that Fernando Tatis swings the bat hard? Probably not.
How about this one? Yeah. I was writing about Eniel De Los Santos in my hotel room in Chicago on Tuesday night, and how just what I thought was an interesting thing, and trying to put it into perspective about how 3 games in a row now, or 3 times in 4 appearances, definitely his last 3 home runs, he had come into 1 inning, closed it out, mm-hmm. and then the first or second pitch of the following inning, as he's back out there, he let up a home run. Mm-hmm. And I was going to write about that as just sort of an interesting thing. Mm-hmm. And someone texted me with a heads up that people were going nuts on Twitter, basically about how stupid Mike Schilt was, and he's got to be aware of this and can't be sending him back out there. Mm-hmm. Okay. So that could be your first reaction when you see mm-hmm. that, mm-hmm. until you zoom out and look mm-hmm. at Eniel De Los Santos as a whole. Mm-hmm. In his previous 3 times, his only other 3 times having gone up down, which is when you mm-hmm. go back in after 1 inning and you come back out in the next, mm-hmm. perfect. Yeah. Had not allowed a run, had allowed 1 hit, had not walked anybody, had struck out like 5 guys. So wait a minute, which stat is it that you want to look at prove the point that you want to make?
Well, and it's what makes baseball the best game, is you can, you know, breaking down stats is one thing. You can change the peripherals. You can change the time frame.
Time frame,
you know. History tells us that Eniel De Los Santos is a league average reliever, but the last month of history tells us he's pretty darn good, right? Like, so what are we believing, you know, moment to moment? Jurickson Profar, his entire career up until this point, he's been a very specific kind of player. Jurickson Profar in the last month and a half has been a much better player.
The right? arbitrary stat is to me the blessing and the curse of baseball.
Yep. Yes.
Right?
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. Again, you know, that we can dig up something that says that this is the first time since 1893 that a starting pitching staff has done this is why baseball is great. You had a note, I think it was in your Padres Daily a few days ago, that the team is considering, or at least talking about, maybe pursuing some bullpen help. Scale of 1 to 10, how big of an issue is this right now, and where could they go?
Ooh, talk about what we were just talking about. If like, how big of an issue is it? Mm-hmm. Well, it's like a DEFCON 4.
Okay.
Right. So 5 is what we're at in peacetime, and everything's great. I think we're at 3 now as the United mm-hmm. States, I think, because there's wars going on around the world. We've never been mm-hmm. at DEFCON 1.
Okay.
DEFCON 2 is like, you know, terror attacks, that kind of thing.
Okay.
I just want to like kind of give you my military knowledge. The extent of
look,
which
look
I
at you.
Yeah. So we're at DEFCON 4. So, you know, got an eye on things, right? That's all. And knowing that, hey, we're probably making a move. Mm-hmm. Where are we going to spend this $4 million we've got left, right? And I'm not saying they're going to go out and get a reliever that's going to cost them $4 million the rest of the year. I'm just saying maybe it's about $4 million or $5 million that you got left to spend. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where it's at. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing about relievers is you can go get good ones fairly cheaply.
Yep.
There are teams that are already, and we'll talk about the Rockies next, but there are teams already that are done, not competing this year. You know, there was some buzz last week about the Padres taking a look at an A's reliever. You know, there are teams throughout baseball, I think, where you could probably go poach somebody from that pen at a relatively competitive price. So,
That is the thing, is like, oh, you're looking for a reliever? Okay, yeah. Everything you just said is true, and that's okay, so that's good. The other thing is lots of other people are looking for them too. But yeah, I think it's better than a starting pitcher, because everyone's looking for them too, and they're more expensive.
Sure. Also, I think that this may give – there's no reason, I don't think, at this time to go get somebody today or this week
Right, because the other thing about relievers is the ebb and flow of the bullpen is like, look, 2 weeks ago, we were talking about Eniel De Los Santos and Yuki Matsui and basically the bullpen as a whole being really good. There was a period of two and a half weeks where they were like one or two in baseball in a lot of areas. Inherited runners scored, ERA, batting average. They were doing really well. Right now they're walking a lot of people, and it's the important thing is, look, Stephen Kolek's been doing great. But the important thing is it's their seventh and eighth inning guys that have been the trouble lately.
Sure, sure. And again, maybe this gives Tom Cosgrove some time to figure stuff out at AAA. You know, he was sent down to work on some things. They have some intriguing young arms down there. Maybe that buys, you know, if they can hold on for another month or 6 weeks with the bullpen that they have, maybe the complexion of it changes a little bit.
The interesting part is I don't know that they will, because you're correct, right? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. The interesting part, one of the interesting parts here is it's just got this feeling this year like they're going to try to plug holes sooner.
Okay. Okay.
Based on, and I've talked about this before, they believe, and when I say they, the decision makers, they had a good enough team to win last year. That doesn't mean they did as good a job as they could have and made sure that every hole was plugged or that every spot was as good as it can be, right? And you really can't do that. Look at the Dodgers, man. Shohei Ohtani's out yesterday. Betts and Freeman aren't hitting, zero runs. As a matter of fact, look at the whole series, basically. Look at their whole season, for goodness sake. That's a really good team, and I wouldn't trade that. You know, if I had to take theirs versus any other team in baseball's lineup, I'd take the Dodgers. That doesn't mean it's the best lineup. They got the best three, maybe four hitters if you put Will Smith in there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But when their top of the order isn't going well, they kind of suck.
And something worth thinking about, I think, as we talk about the Padres trying to plug holes, after they play three games against the Rockies, they go on the road to play Atlanta, Cincinnati, then they come home to play three with the New York bleeping Yankees. It seems like if you were trying to get right for a stretch, that's a pretty big nine-game stretch coming up.
It is. It is. I think, again, not to – you know, harp on this, but I'm a guy who's watched what was supposedly a good team not fare very well against bad teams lately. So as in recent years. So I'm thinking this is a big series against the Rockies, in part the scope of the whole season, get as many wins as you can, but you then go to Atlanta for four, Cincinnati for three, Yankees for three. So Ryan, I mean, yeah. And go back though, like, Cubs, Dodgers, they've taken two out of three from two, you know, when the Padres went there, the Cubs were percentage points ahead or behind. Anyway, virtual tie for first place in the NL Central, and the Dodgers, obviously, first place. So they're doing pretty well.
Yeah, they've got a combined 6-3 against the Diamondbacks, Cubs, and Dodgers. I think we would have taken that 10 days ago, probably. I think that's a successful.
Maybe two of three. Will, we kept saying that last year when the Padres couldn't get a sweep, right? They had they had some series where it was like, oh, well, winning two of three is okay. Well, yeah, except for when you need those wins at the end of the season. But yes, two of three is just fine. It's called winning a series.
Yep. We've been putting off talking about the Rockies for 24 minutes here. let's get into it real quick. Dakota Hudson versus Randy Vasquez.
0-6, 6.35 ERA, Dakota Hudson.
That's great. Remember, he was a thing for a while, right? Yep. I mean, he was a Cardinal prospect. Did he pitch for Mike Schilt at some point?
I believe so.
Yep. Game two, Cal Quantrill. By the way, good numbers on Cal Quantrill.
Cal Quantrill is the kind of guy that it is important to come in here and shove.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's not, if I'm remembering right, his numbers are not terrible for a guy who pitches for the Rockies, and I don't know what his breakdown is, but I'm just saying.
Right, 3.94 ERA, 2.55 ERA over his last four starts.
Okay.
Pretty good.
Me some Cal Quantrill. I just think, I think that's a guy who pitches in the major leagues for 15 years.
And really, a really good pickup by the Rockies, who I believe he wasn't a waiver claim, but I mean, they just went and paid him, I think it's like $4 million. For the year.
Yeah, I can't remember what happened. That
Cleveland non-tendered him.
Okay, non-tendered. There it was. You're right.
Yeah. And so he takes on Dylan Cease. And then Austin Gomber, a soft tossing left-hander on Wednesday against Michael. You would think, at least on the surface, that all three of these pitching matchups, Maybe not game one. Randy Vasquez, we've had a note about him. We talked about him on the last show.
Yeah, Jeff did a nice thing today about Randy Vasquez.
Again, the metrics, the numbers, this guy throws hard. He has good stuff. Hasn't really put it all together yet for them. ERA of 4.5. Good walk.
Good start last time. I mean, good start. As in trending in the right direction. But yes, important that he doesn't put them down tonight.
Right. And this may be his last start for a while too, right? Because we're looking at very real possibility that Joe Musgrove rejoins the club.
I think Joe's going to throw a bullpen today if he didn't yesterday, but I think it was going to be today. And then another one maybe on Friday and start Sunday if everything's going according to plan. Sunday in Atlanta, ESPN.
That's right. So that'd be what, 4?
It's a wraparound series. I'm so excited. I haven't ever had a wraparound series where it goes Friday to Monday.
Is it nice just because you're not battling the airport on a Sunday night?
It's an extra day of, it's just a different, I don't know why I'm so excited. It's just an extra, what am I trying to say? It's a variant, you know, right. This game becomes just so predictable. I love this job because I am a little bit kind of like, I got to be focused. And so every day being the same is very good for me. But then I also love the variety. You don't know what's going to happen in each game. I don't know what's going to happen with my airplane. I don't, know all these different things that can happen within the context of it being the same basically every day. I'm also looking forward to seeing how well I respond then, because I never know what day it is during the season, as does, no one that's involved in the game. So when you start throwing the final game of a series being on a Monday instead of a Sunday or a Wednesday, next week I'm going to be all screwed up.
Atlanta in late May, pack some deodorant. That's that could be hot.
Or here's the deal. When I think of rain delays, the two places I think of are Atlanta and Cincinnati. And that's what this road trip coming up is. So,
it could be brutal. We put you on the spot. I put you on the spot at the end of every episode. I was thinking about this yesterday, and I almost texted you just because I want to know. When Kevin Acey isn't at the ballpark and the Padres are playing, how close attention do you pay to the game? And do you like take notes? Do you make mental notes? I know.
We're gonna have to wrap this up, but here's the deal. It depends on how tired I am, because sometimes you have to know your limitations and that you need to take a little bit of a break.
Sure.
But yesterday I was actually bummed that I wasn't covering it, and I did watch almost every pitch yesterday while also paying attention to my wife and my mother-in-law and my daughter-in-law.
That's a good cover right there at the end, Kevin. I like that. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.